Hey everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. It's such a great pleasure to be with you. And yes, we seems like we've got a few friends in the house today. So glad you guys could be with us. It's always a pleasure having you on board. You know where to find me in all the usual places, you know, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Do that download thing. You make a brother feel good. You know we like that. And also follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. So today, you know, this guy, every other day, there's something else from Rick. And you just go, you know what? That just made my week. So given what Rick's already put out there, I'm like banked up for a year and a half at this point in terms of the days that are made. I'm talking about Rick Wilson, longtime Republican political strategist, infamous. Ad maker. Some say negative ad maker. I say, no, this brother's telling the truth. He's just making it feel negative because you know your ish is so messed up. And he's also a commentator. Since 2015, he's been a leading conservative critic of President Trump. His regular column with the Daily Beast is a hilarious and spot-on must-read in the political community. Published in the Washington Post, Politico, The Hill, Rolling Stone, the New York Daily News, USA Today. This brother's all over the place. We love him for that. He's constantly called on for political insights. We get to play with him on my network at MSNBC. You see him over at CNN. But here's the thing, which really is the fun part about Rick Wilson, is how he's created this little thing called the Lincoln Project, along with a number of other good folks out there that we all know and love, like Steve Schmidt. This effort has been phenomenally successful at, I think, doing something even Democrats have been unable to do at this point, not only just rattle Donald Trump's cages, but to really get the American people to start looking at this election through a different lens. His most recent book is Running Against the Devil, A Plot to Save America from Trump and Democrats from Themselves. Rick, welcome back to the podcast, baby.
Thank you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to get all those bona fides out there so people know that you come to these conversations from a spot of experience and relevance. And how would you, as we are sitting, what, now less than 90 days out before the general election this fall, how would you assess where we are before we get into some of the meat and potatoes of this campaign and where the country is?
Well, Joe Biden is positioned well to win, but as you and I both know, this shit's never over till it's over.
That's right.
And so Donald Trump is like a wild animal in a trap. And he will do any and everything to escape that trap. And they will lie, cheat, steal. They will go all over the board to try to pull out an electoral college victory in this campaign. And we're starting to see the sort of clues they're giving us about how bad they could actually be, whether it's deploying troops on the streets or whether it's screwing around with the post office or any number of other things. We're really getting an outline of just how dangerous they are. So none of us get much sleep for the next 89 days. We're going to be pushing hard to the goal line on this campaign, and it's not going to be anything easy or trivial.
So Lincoln Project has been, as I noted, very successful at kind of creating some bridges for people to start to cross.
Right.
And I think some would argue cross move away from Trump to sort of go, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, this kind of creates perspective. How do you assess that effort right now? And has it really been as effective, at least as it appears to have been, from a lot of us sort of sitting a little bit on the sidelines and, you know, sure. Walking through a few of sure. the back rooms?
Well, we set out in this with an understanding there were two big pools of targets. The first pool are, you know, the swing voters we saw who were soft on Trump in 16, the ones that held their nose and said, right. I don't like him, but I can't vote for Hillary. She had this demonic mythological character in the Republican Party.
Right.
So those folks, we started watching them right after that election. And by 2018, they walked away from the GOP. The party shrank. Everybody always thinks, oh, right. Trump's got 97%. It's 97% of a lot smaller table. You know, when you got 97% of the people filling a banquet hall, it's one thing. When it's a four top at Waffle House, it's another. So we knew those people were walking away from Trump as far back as late 17. They tend to be more female. They tend to be more suburban. They tend to be more educated. They tend to have children. They tend to be in two income earner households. And there's a lot of them. So we started talking to those folks right in the beginning, not only to litigate the case against Trump, which we've been very effective at doing, talking about his failed leadership on everything from foreign policy to COVID to jobs, and focusing on those things out in the states. Now, those approaches we've taken are kind of below the waterline. We're like an iceberg, and the top of that, the tip of that iceberg is what people see every day. Those are the fun ads. Those are the ones going after the Donald Trump's brain. Those are the ones where we go and screw with his head every day, and we run these big splashy ads that go after, you know, whether he can walk down a ramp or drink a glass of water, you know, whether he's fat, whether he's, you know, all these things. And we don't do them just because we're trolling. Although, as our buddy John Weaver says, sometimes, you know, it's not trolling when there's a fish on the hook. So we know that Trump cannot handle these ads. And so we keep doing them for one big reason. Every day he's locked up on one of our ads, freaking out. That's a day that Donald Trump isn't hitting Joe Biden.
Yeah.
That's a day Joe Biden got another day to run and another moment of air. You know, you and I both know there's one thing you never get back in a campaign. That's a lost day.
That's it. You don't.
And Donald Trump squanders day after day after day. And we try to help him as many days as we can to spend his morning in the White House walking around screaming at people like, oh, God, Lincolnite Project, and I can't stand it. And, you know, my favorite part of it is, you know, this White House and this campaign, they leak like a submarine with a screen door.
Yep.
So I hear about their conference calls, and I hear about their marching orders and their Slack channels all the time, and they spend a ton of time worrying about the Lincoln Project, and it is very gratifying how much they panic about the stuff we do every day.
Well, it does create, as you said, that space where Trump, because of his nature, fixates. Mm-hmm. And once you get him to fixate, you're pretty much good till that's over, which could probably be somewhere between 16 to 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. And you know? our longest one we knew that, I mean, look, we got his campaign manager fired, which was kind of a spectacular accomplishment. But we knew.
Well, can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah.
I don't want to gloss over that point. Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of people actually missed. They think that Pascal's being moved out of that was just sort of, okay, Trump is now sort of reassessing and no, folks, this was result of that ad that Trump clearly fixated on and realized that his campaign was getting hit hard and had no response.
We knew from a source in the White House at a senior level and a source in the campaign at a mid-level that Donald Trump was getting increasingly pissed off that Brad was living high in Fort Lauderdale and that Brad had a Ferrari and he made a point about it. And the thing that we heard pissed the president off a lot was that Brad was taking private jets to events.
Yes.
And Trump, you know, he doesn't want anybody on his staff to be richer or to look like they're living a higher life. And he doesn't like people to make money beyond a certain threshold.
Right.
And so we'd heard that from two separate sources. And back in May, we started scheming on it. And like we devised an ad that was, I told my guys, I was like, I want it to look like the opening of Miami Vice. I want it deliberately vulgar. I want, and, you know, one of the Trump people had this like very disapproving thing to a reporter, like, it is disgusting they would show an ad of bikini clad bottoms. I'm like,
perfect.
Right there. Gotcha.
Landed.
But so we hit him with that ad in DC and we aired it so that Donald Trump would see it. You run it on Fox and Friends and on Tucker and Laura and Sean, and he's going to watch it. He's going to see it. And he did. And then it was like a bomb had gone off under Brad and he lost power. And then he started getting shuffled out of meetings and he started not hearing about meetings. And then they just said, you're out.
You're out.
And they're like, oh, we're going to give you a lateral move to be head of data. And it took about 3.5 weeks before the bomb finally completely blew him out. But we did that, and we know we did it. And our people inside and reporters reported that Trump, in part, fired him because of our ads getting in his head. That doesn't happen in campaigns.
No.
I mean, the only campaign manager who's been fired like in a public way in our lifetimes was Dick Morris.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In 96,
when he
got caught
so.
with a foot fetish prostitute
exactly.
In the Hay Adams Hotel.
Yes.
But mostly, you know, those sort of guys are immune to political pressure. And so, of course, we got Brad's hide up tacked on the barn out back right now. So,
well, it speaks to, I think, an even more important issue as the campaign starts to unfold. And there have been a number of stories that have been written now about your efforts, the efforts of Lincoln Project. And there's one that was out, I believe, this week, in fact, a couple of days ago, entitled Never Trump, Republicans Team with Progressives to Convert the President's Religious Base, and written by Gabby Orr over at Politico. Mm-hmm. And you guys have teamed up with Vote Common Good to launch this partnership that's designed to mobilize faith community, those mm-hmm. faith voters, to basically turn away from Trump. How does that effort look? How's it working? And do sure. you think it will have the kind of impact that you're hoping? Again, this idea is not something that is, oh, you know, we want to, you know, go after Christians or all this stuff. This is really about, okay, if you guys say this and this is the guy you're backing, maybe you want to think about some other things. But more importantly, these are religious people, members of this community, who are also looking to make a break, if sure. I'm not mistaken.
You're correct. You know, one of the things people misinterpret about the Lincoln Project is we're not a policy organization.
Right.
We're a submarine in the ocean hunting targets. And so we're going to ally ourselves with folks that can help us address those targets. And the Vote Common Good guys and a bunch of other folks on the religious center and left have been trying very hard to get Trump's evangelical base to understand the dichotomy between their faith principles and his character and behaviors.
Right.
And to get them out of the mode of thinking, oh, well, it's just the judges. And so we recognize, like Steve Bannon said, if we pull off 2-4% from these numbers, it's the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is in a narrow canyon. He can't afford losses. He can't lose parts of his base right now. If he does, the whole thing falls apart like that. So that's one of the reasons we're going after those guys and having conversations with them. And we're talking to a lot of other allied groups and a lot of other folks who are out there working in different spaces. You know, we've started a major effort with Hispanic voters, both on media and organizing. So we're going to be working in a lot of different areas that we know the Trump campaign cannot afford to lose.
Right, right. So at the same time, though, there is within that left sort of progressive community some reservations, some concerns.
Sure.
The same day that this article came out, another one came out by Samuel Moyne. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I did.
Talking about the Never Trumpers have already won. And he's basically sort of reflecting on and walking through a book that's come out by mm-hmm. Robert Selden and Stephen Tellis, who are part of sort of the libertarian wing of conservatism, I guess you could say.
Right.
And they've written a book, Never Trump, The Revolt of the Conservative Elites, and which is actually a pretty good book. But it was interesting to hear Moyne talk about the fact that what you're doing and what this organization, the Lincoln Project, is all about. He sums it up this way. He says, quote, "With Trump elected president, the Never Trumpers presented themselves as politically homeless. Yet they were quickly welcomed with open arms by liberals, one-time enemies of progressive orthodoxies like conservative Beltway lawyer George Conway, for example. became liberal icons within liberalism. And he goes on to talk about the fact that that Saladin and Tellis remarked that never Trump Republicans have been rehabilitated by mainstream Democrats in a way that was once unthinkable. This idea that the never Trump phenomenon, according to Moyne, has succeeded in an overwhelming way to contain the left. I think that's putting a whole lot of work on a couple of brothers who said, you know what, this
Republican
Party has got to go.
I think they are.
I wanted to get your response because sometimes, and this is the problem with liberals, they either get way emotional on some shit or they just completely overthink it.
I think this thing is so overwrought and so overthought. And I told one of these guys that brought this up to me the other day, I said, you know what I want out of Joe Biden? Decent inauguration tickets.
That's it.
That's all I want. I have no policy agenda with Joe Biden. I'm not asking him to appoint anybody to anything. I'm just here to finish the job on Trump. That's it. That's my ball game. My agenda. Love me or hate me, that's the agenda. And what he doesn't understand, because these guys see this through a policy lens, is that we're better than the Democrats at this work.
Yes.
We are better than them at doing this.
Yes.
If there was a single Democratic policy shop or campaign shop that could do this, they'd be doing this.
Absolutely.
And they're not. Yep. And so, you know, we're here for the good of the order, the good of the country, to kick the shit out of Donald Trump. That's our job. That's our job.
Because Lord knows he's kicked the shit out of enough of us.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what people seem to forget.
Right. And you and I, it's like, yeah. Oh, why would they be mad at Trump? Oh, I don't know. I could think of a million or so reasons a year. There is some hand-wringing on the left about it. And it's like, this one woman just attacks me constantly on Twitter. And a friend of mine went to her and said, what is it you want Rick to do? Do you want him to just go back to Trump's side? Or do you want him to not do anything to help? Or what is it you want him to do? And she said it was like watching the gears go bleep, 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 bloop, bloop, bloop. And the woman's head, she's like, well, I he needs to apologize for Ronald Reagan. I'm like, all right, I was in high school, but all right, you know. But yeah, it's just like, it's like, you know, we're here to win. We're here to do campaign work. And you and I are campaign guys, you know.
Yeah.
We hire people to do policy shit. I like, y'all call the Heritage Foundation. I don't fucking care. Just do whatever. I have a lot of trouble looking at that kind of thing with a straight face and thinking, y'all are really overthinking who I am. I just like to fight and win.
and the thing about it, for those of us who have known of you and known you for a long time, know that that's you. I mean, you've been the guy who's behind the big policy screens and all that, position the damn policy to make it something palatable for people to go to vote for, but most importantly, put the ground game in place, put the strategy in place, and what was necessary, which was most of the times in campaigns, to beat back against your opponent in a way that sets up the win. This is about setting up a win. As I tell Democrats all the time, stop overthinking this shit. This is not hard. This is not even homework, people.
No,
it's not homework. This is about as easy as sitting down and pulling up Netflix on your computer with a beer next to you and vegging for the next 2.5 hours. That's how simple this election is if you are anyone other than someone who's lost their mind to Trump. And that is winning this thing. We know who he is. We know what he's done. We know what he's failed to do. Now, if you're okay with that, then we know where you are. If you're not okay with that, then we know where you need to be. And so the goal of the Lincoln Project, the goal of guys like Rick Wilson, the goal of guys like me and others is snap out of it. Wake the hell up.
Right.
Get your ass in gear and get about the business of turning this thing around. Because there's no reason why this re-election shouldn't even be a question, in my view.
Correct. You know, I say this a lot, Michael, to people. Politics is simple but hard.
Yes.
Okay. The steps we have to take here are not crazy. There's no like super bank shot magic mojo out there. There's no like, well, we'll propose this policy and then this group will love it. No, we have to go out and motivate people to register and vote. That is it. They need to go out and register now and vote as soon as they can for Joseph Robinette Biden, because Donald Trump is a proximate threat to the future of this country. It's simple. Now, all the steps are hard to do it. All the logistics underneath it require smart people and money and activity and volunteers and all that. But we're coming together on that front with the Lincoln Project. We've got 20,000 people who have already volunteered just in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. Wow. To do wow. work. And we're training them online right now. We've had to reinvent campaigning because, you know, you and I came up when you'd send door knockers out there. You'd send people out to go to big events, state fairs and county fairs, and to walk neighborhoods and walk shopping malls and hand out lit. We can't do that anymore. So, you know, we're having people do all this digitally and reach out on social media and reach out in person and make personal phone calls and send postcards, all this stuff that we never had to do before. We never figured out how to, we just built a new thing. Because well, we have to.
If you're looking for a translation platform that can help with the mechanics and the infrastructure, the information and the data, be happy as chairman of the U.S. Vote Foundation to make our efforts available to those efforts, which we have with other organizations like R Street and other groups out there where we partnered up to get people access to their ballot boxes, getting information that they need, mm-hmm. understanding what's at stake, when does early voting beginning in your neighborhood, where are the polls located, are you going to get access to an absentee ballot or vote by mail, what is that process? All of this is relevant information, which, by the way, good people out there, was exposed by none other than Donald Trump this week, and he decided that suddenly vote by mail was
a miracle.
It's a miracle. It works. It only works in Florida, but it works. Okay, what's that all about? We all know what that's about. His internal polling is showing him that his base, which are the senior citizens who live in Florida, aren't going to go out and vote. They get their ballots by mail. And so all of a sudden it's like retreat, you know, they start doing the backstroke, trying to get their
after acting. Weeks of saying, oh my God, mail-in ballots are corrupt and wrong. It's suddenly like, except over there. And that doesn't work. That shit does not play. Nobody buys that. And it's confused them. You know, Glenn Bolger, one of the great Republican pollsters a couple weeks ago, he got so frustrated, he finally tweeted it out. And it was like, the president needs to stop saying this. This is ridiculous. Why is he doing this? You know, it's hurting him with Republican voters. And all I could think of was, oh, I am so sad to hear that. That is just terrible for you. He's a good dude. But I mean, you could tell how frustrated he was because this is not something you get away with.
No.
If you turn, I mean, we won states all over the country, Florida in particular, by running great early and absentee ballot programs.
Yep. That's how Republicans have won. Look, I can tell you.
You know this.
2010, baby.
Yeah.
I did. There were two things I concentrated on in 2010, and that was redistricting and state legislatures, which Republicans at the national level always took for granted or ignored, and how I'm going to get my ballot out to voters and how I'm going to get those voters to the polls.
Yep.
It was not a complicated thing for me. It shouldn't be complicated now, but the president has dialed this thing down so dumb that he's now getting caught in his own stupidity when he realizes, oh crap, I guess I'm telling my voters to stay home because now they're afraid to vote by mail. And if coronavirus kicks up again, gee, I guess they won't go out to the polls. No, they're not going to do that at senior centers around the country. You're not going to put a polling place there. Those folks have relied, as we all know who've been in this game, on getting a ballot sent to them. It's crazy. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some more nitty-gritty with none other than the incomparable Rick Wilson, author of the book Running Against the Devil. More with Rick right after this.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
All right, Rick, we are back in the house here. So let's take a look at where we are. How do you assess the Biden campaign right now? Mm-hmm. And what does the Veep stakes for him, what do they mean, or versus what should they mean, if you know what I mean?
Right. I do. I think I got you. Well, first off, the Biden campaign is in a very unique position. This is such a pure referendum on Donald Trump.
Yes.
That a lot
Could
of
you
the
repeat you know, that please so everybody understands what this election is about?
This election is a referendum on Donald Trump, full stop. It is a decision, 4 more years of him or anything else. All re-elections are a referendum on the incumbent, but this one's a particularly powerful referendum because we've got 150,000 dead people.
Yeah.
We've got an economy that's in the shitter. We've got a president who has embraced our enemies and insulted our allies around the world. And we've got a White House that's so out of control that nothing in our future with this president can be seen as stable. So it's a referendum. It's a simple decision for most Americans. Now, Biden, pursuing the referendum, has basically kept his head down, smartly, mm-hmm. for two reasons. One, Democratic voters will crawl over broken glass to vote against Donald Trump. They hate him.
Right.
Two, if he makes the race about policy, Donald Trump gets to say, oh, it's me versus the socialists, not me versus Joe Biden. Because right now, voters look at a decent man versus an indecent man, a good man versus a bad man, a competent man versus an incompetent man. And Trump is desperate to move on to policy questions if he can, but he probably cannot as long as Biden keeps playing the right kind of rope-a-dope here. Now, the Veep stakes, Michael, is a question that if I were legally allowed to counsel the Biden campaign, which is a super PAC supporting him, I cannot legally do so. But if anybody was listening to this podcast, they would know that my feeling is, do not rush. Why are you in a hurry on the Veep? Right. Why are you in a hurry? It doesn't gain you all that much, historically speaking. And it lets the Trump campaign spend a week telling Republican voters, my God, he's appointed the worst socialist in history to run with him. We're one day away from gay Sharia marriage communes. And they'll do that shit. You know they will. That's how they are. And so, you know, we're in a situation where the longer he waits, the better he is. And I think he's made a commitment to select a woman. And there are some very good characters in the play. I think they've all got an upside and they've all got a downside.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Karen Bass, very effective on TV, but also, you know, in the state of Florida, which you kind of got to win, there's plenty of tape of her calling, you know, Castro El Comandante and El Jefe Grande or whatever.
Right.
And
right.
That's not a good thing in Florida. It's a little bit of a thing.
Yeah.
Among Cubans and Venezuelans and, you know.
Yeah. That Latin community is not.
Yeah. Well, she right. seems like a little bit of an oppo challenge for them.
Yeah.
There seems to be more stuff coming out. Now, Harris, an effective debater, not going to bring you much more than you've got in California. You're going to win it anyway.
Right.
And does she bring in African-American women? And that's the real question. And if she does, it's a showstopper. It's amazing. My personal favorite is Tammy Duckworth because she's an Asian-American. She is a combat wounded veteran who lost both legs in combat in the war on terror. She is a handful. She's a pistol. She's hilarious. She's from a region of the country that we would really like to shore up.
Right.
And I think there's a lot to like about her. But again, I think Biden could do very well with any of these folks. I think he's not in a deep hole with any of them. I mean, Bass maybe a little bit, but
yeah, I accept your analysis, particularly at the beginning where, you know, I felt that the pressure right now coming as it has from the various quarters. In one sense, they've been very good at sort of not allowing it to rattle their cages too much. But I think that there has been some rattling in the last week or so where the narrative has kind of exploded because of various supporters, you know, around the Kamala Harris story. And, you know, what do you mean that, you know, she has to prove this and she can't be that and all of this other stuff.
Right,
and
you've got
the emergence of, along with Tammy Duckworth, whom I agree with you there, would be a very interesting candidate. Susan Rice, for me, takes the needle to where it, to that sweet spot for Biden because of one, the personal relationship, which I know matters a lot to him. Kamala has that too, but that was more with Beau and not with Joe. Whereas Susan's relationship is with Joe, is the former vice president in the Obama administration. They work together, et cetera. Ambition is a play here, and I get the narrative and why people were criticizing those who spoke about Kamala's ambition. But okay, you're in the game now, folks. You know, the rules that apply to white men are now going to start to apply to you too, and so you're gonna start getting looked at through that very same prism as we've seen other white male vice presidential candidates get looked at. And you know, while their ambitions may have already been baked in or assumed, there were other aspects about those individuals that certainly came under the kind of scrutiny that, you know, you would not necessarily subject a female candidate to.
And we saw that
going back to the Ferraro campaign, et cetera.
Oh yeah. 84.
So, right. So there's, you know, so this is the new space, which is going to be interesting that Joe Biden, in a very ironic way, will probably do as much, if not just a little bit more, to advance the role of women at the national level for office, very much like he did with the gay marriage issue.
You know? Right.
You know, just by happenstance. Oh, yeah, we're doing gay marriage now, Barack. I forgot to tell you that. And then Barack is like, wait a minute, play catch up.
Yeah, somebody was like, somebody mentioned something about gay marriage, and they're like, oh, the Lincoln Project guys were against it 10 years ago. And I pointed out, I was like, well, if you go back, I got a lot of shit back in 1998 for saying we had to evolve on the issue of gay marriage as a party or we're going to lose it completely. And I said, that was 10 years before Barack Obama came around on the issue.
Right. A man ahead of his time, and that's our Rick Wilson. Yes, you know. So I think this it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a win for him, regardless. My concern still remains, as much as a lot of folks talk about not getting hooked up or hung up on race. I see that's what this has become. And so my question to a lot of Democrats over the last week is, so if he picks, Elizabeth Warren, what are you going to say? If he picks Governor Whitmer, what are you going to do? And I think that, you know, begins to expose a little bit of where this is. Now, interesting with someone like Elizabeth Warren, she's got a lot of traction with Black female voters. They like her a lot.
They do.
The reason is, and a lot of people don't appreciate this, is that she's someone who's come into the room with Black voters and walked out carrying their agenda.
Yep.
And that cannot be said for virtually everybody else, including some Black politicians we know.
I think that's exactly right. And a lot of, you know, I on the one hand, I make fun of the policy stuff because, you know, we're not policy guys, but a lot of the policy stuff she proposed was very much reflective of sitting down with African-American leaders and voters.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely correct on that.
And they paid attention to that. I mean, this is one of the great ironies of the last 400 years. When white folks weren't beating the shit out of us, we were paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of knew what was going on in the room. And I think the reality of it now is, we're at that point generationally, especially with the 30 and younger community, of showing what we know and putting it in the game in a way that I think is not only explosive, but transformative for the political process.
Right.
And what I think for me, Rick, which is why beyond the pure political work that the Lincoln Project does, I appreciate your being there and others who are also occupying that space, is that for Republicans, we're about to not only lose out on this election and likely the Senate this November, so there's that whole political thing, but this could be a generational shift away from the GOP in a way that 25, 30, 40 years from now, you have still no cachet with the vast majority of voters. Yeah, you may be winning some local races here and there, and you know the Congress will ebb and flow or whatever, but the idea to create the kind of governing majority that Karl Rove talked about back in the day and chastised me for, because he didn't think I could create it, although, hey, Karl, I did, in 2010, the reality of it is all of that kind of goes away because of how this country's changed and the fact that we refuse to keep up with it, holding on to a white Southern strategy that was put in place by Goldwater and Nixon back in the 1960s, that the only thing has gotten us, we can say with any proof positive in terms of its completion and fruition, is Donald Trump.
Yeah. And I think it is something that, you know, you see it in the flashy stuff with Trump, like the Charlottesville disaster, and you see it in the small petty shit that he wouldn't go to honor John Lewis.
Oh my goodness!
I watched it and I was thinking, any president who has an approval rating of 38% and whose numbers with African American voters are so deep in the shitter you can't see daylight. All right. And then you look at one of the most beloved icons of the civil rights era, who is a genuine person who lived in courage for 70 years of activism almost, and this petty bitch whiner. It's like, he didn't give me my inauguration. I'm not going to go to his blah, blah, blah. I just was like, God, they fucking deserve the damn it. They deserve that shit to be played back 50 years from now when they're still trying to pull this off. But no, they can't get out of their own way. And the DNA of the Trump effort, so broadly speaking, is just, it's a deep stupidity with these people.
So as I get the, unfortunately, let you get out of here because I know you got stuff to do.
They're going to put me back on the hamster wheel and make more ads tonight.
I think they are, as they need to. So, you know, I was part of sort of the wargaming of what possible scenarios could play out this fall. You're very familiar with that as
sure,
well.
Yep, yep.
Part of that process. How do you assess our readiness as citizens to go into this election, and the idea that the president has, in his own words, said, "Well, I'll just wait and see whether or not I accept the outcome of the election." What does this mean for our democracy? What does it mean for us as citizens?
We hear the
leader, of the country say that.
I've been reading Anya Applebaum's new book, which is called The Twilight of Democracy. And I keep thinking about the things Trump says, like, I don't know, maybe I won't take those results. I won't believe them. It's rigged. It's scammed. And it's why I tell people, particularly Democratic activists, and particularly the grassroots folks working with Lincoln Project, this has to be such a big win. This can't be 272. This has got to be a decisive, crushing, backbreaking blow. It's got to be so bad that a math genius couldn't figure out an electoral calculus to get Donald Trump home. It's got to be a devastating, profoundly destructive hit. And if you don't, this guy will try. He's a day trader. He's a gambler. He'll try to do, well, maybe if I get Hannity to declare the results invalid and get Ron DeSantis in Florida to do this or so-and-so to do that. Right. Or whatever. He doesn't care about the law or the Constitution or any American tradition or values. Guy wants to win. He wants to stay in position.
That's it.
And if you don't beat him on those terms, you don't beat him. So we're going to face a very risky and very challenging moment in our history. And I have to say, I am going to work every day for the next 89 days to ensure that it's a big win against him. If it's not a big win against him, we're going to have a lot of work to do between November 3rd and the day that Joe Biden puts his hand on that Bible and swears himself into office.
There's no doubt about that. And I appreciate your insights. And I really hope people take to heart what Rick has said, because regardless of where you are in your political thinking, where your public ideas of this country should be focused on the kind of leaders that we want to run the kind of country we want. And right now, unless you're telling me otherwise, I don't think this is the country, the way it's being set up, is the kind of country that Americans want. So pay attention. The book is Running Against the Devil, A Plot to Slave America, to Save America from the Trump, from Trump and Democrats from themselves. The work is The Lincoln Project, and the man is none other than Rick Wilson. I love you, brother.
It's love you, brother. Can't wait to see you. Talk to you soon, man.
You got it. You got it. All right, folks. So that does it for this time together. Don't forget to stay with us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Rick on Twitter at The Rick Wilson. Follow me at Michael Steele, and I'll catch you all next time. Peace out.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.